This is the Morgan Report with David Morgan. For the latest in precious metals investing, gold, silver, the economy, and more, go to themorganreport.com.
Welcome to Renegading, the show that allows us to think differently. It was the French philosopher Voltaire who said, "All paper money eventually returns to its intrinsic value, zero." As the world is now awash with fiat currency and the debt that accompanies it, should we heed his words and worry about the collective confidence we all have in paper money? If so, what to do about it, and how do we protect ourselves when more tangible alternatives like precious metals are still seen as a barbarous relic? The mainstream view on markets and the global economy is that things have never been so good. Stock prices are hitting all-time highs, and these valuations only ever go in one direction. But what if this rosy analysis ignores the fundamentals, and actually, the economic storm clouds have started to gather? Joining me to discuss what's really going on in the global economy is the canary in the metals mine, David Morgan. David, welcome.
Thank you very much for swinging by. Welcome to London.
Well, thank you, Ross.
You are contrarian when it comes to investing. Not for the sake of being contrarian, it's just you see a very different picture of the global economy, the US economy, than most other commentators. What do you see that's different?
Well, what I see is that the numbers don't tell the picture of the physical economy. There are usually, in days past, there was a direct correlation between the price of the Dow Jones Industrials, for an example, and what the industrial base of the country is actually doing. So a high stock price in the DJI, confirmed by the transportations, gave a pretty clear picture that the economy is on track and is doing better than it was the year before.
And are you saying that those figures have become skewed?
Absolutely, because what you see now is just numbers that are poured out on the mainstream and the financial markets time and time again, and most of that's due to companies buying their own stock back so they have a less float so the prices go higher. It's pretty much the end game of what you see as far as what happens at the end of the Age of Empire, which you did such an excellent job in The Four Horsemen. I mean, I still see that as a main thesis.
It's funny you should mention it, and the audience, I think we've set this up, but actually, you come to this point because we get still emails about Four Horsemen. And one of the, because that's when we first met and we interviewed you for the film. And actually, we've got a clip of you in the film talking about the end of empire. This is the clip.
And this again is typifying the end of an empire where things were so great. We have this last oomph of momentum that we used to be great and we felt great and we don't feel it anymore. So everyone is out searching for it. Well, maybe it's in the best food or the best clothes or the best music or the best movies or a reality TV show or another magazine. But you can never get enough of what you don't need. What you need is a strong moral conviction that is pervasive throughout the society and integrity reigns.
The line that people love is you can't get enough of what you don't need. If you put that line into markets today, into corporates in America, what is it that they can't get enough of? Their own stock?
Well, that would be one. I think it's difficult to answer because there's so many vectors. But one of them is if we break it down from something very complex, which is a global economy, into what is the motivation between, let's say, two ideologies. One ideology we'll call capitalism, and the other ideology we'll call socialism. If we look at capitalism, for what is the main impetus of capitalism, especially at the end of the Age of Empire? It's greed. Right. And if we look at the impetus of socialism, especially at the end of the Age of Empire, it's jealousy.
Right.
So now what we have is basically a two-class system where you've got a bunch of people that in their heart of hearts probably realize that the empire is starting to crumble, that the facade is starting to come off.
And this specifically is the American empire.
Yes.
Or Western?
Well, it would be what I call the Anglo-American Empire.
Anglo-American.
Which is basically the London financial markets. I mean, when you have 40% of the economy of the United States throwing paper back and forth, when it should probably be 4%, maybe 7% maximum, you've got something wrong. This is America.
Just explain that, throwing paper around, because our audience will hear it. They won't.
Well, there's so many things that are attributed in the economy of the United States that revolve around the financial markets. not just stockbrokers, and that is, you know, software. I mean, everything to deal with making money in a non-productive way by producing some derivative product or by some trading program or sitting all day playing like a video game, except you're doing it for stock trading or commodity trading or whatever. This doesn't add anything of physical value to the society at large, and yet it takes up a massive amount of resources.
And you're saying that you think that it's possibly 10 times the size it should be, the market.
Exactly. Yeah. You should be you, meaning the world, I mean, the population base, whatever it is, if it's a city state, if it's a nation, whatever, should be basically working toward a betterment of living standards, which doesn't necessarily mean more stuff. And I think that's where, you know, the left or the socialists are looking and saying, well, how much do you need, you greedy SOBs? And the greedy SOBs are saying, well, how much should we give to you for doing nothing? And this is, you know, I'm talking to generalities, and I'm not even trying to take a side, because I'm kind of in the middle in a way. I mean, what I want is like free market capitalism, which means that the market determines the winners and the losers, and there are no subsidies by government or anyone else. The market determines what the production rate would be. However, it's not that way right now. So we have crony capitalism.
What does that mean?
It means that if you're in the financial markets, or if you know the right people, or you're tattooed to the government, that you get to produce something that really the market determines isn't viable. I mean, you can look at someone as renowned as Elon Musk, and let me just start out by saying I admire him a great deal for his thinking capacity and what he's done. On the other hand, as a free market capitalist, I would say it's ridiculous that the company that he has gone as far as it has in a free market. It could never happen. In other words, the subsidies that the government has provided to him for his idea is wrong, in my view, because it isn't pure.
So to conclude on Musk, because he's hailed as a visionary and the mainstream media hold him up as the poster boy for entrepreneurship, your view is slightly different. He's a wonderful entrepreneur because he's got all these subsidies. If we come back to your capitalism, socialism, but he actually veers towards more entrepreneur socialism because of these subsidies, and those are the things that are pushing him through, as opposed to a product that the free market really wants, therefore it beats a path to his door to buy it.
Right. Well, I'm going to shoot off on a tangent somewhat, but I mean, you know, when we watched the clip, you know, I talked about we used to be great and all this. And of course, now I'd forgotten exactly what I had said.
Yeah.
And here it is. This big theme is make America great again.
Right. How is he going to do that?
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
Right. Why?
Because you have a fundamental problem that can't be corrected. You can't print wealth. So we're going into further debt under Trump, which is, you know, a calculation of math. It's not really a political issue. It's a math problem. In other words, you cannot print wealth. You cannot borrow yourself rich. And this is what we're trying to do. Give more, give a tax cut to, you know, across the board, more or less. And does that help people get to make their own decisions on their own money? Yes. I think that's favorable as far as ideologies are concerned. But to do it, you've got to quit borrowing as much from the bank. And you don't, you're borrowing more. So you're just basically borrowing from your uncle to live a better lifestyle that you can never pay back. Someone has to pay the price.
So if you then had tabula rasa, if you had a blank slate, how would you begin to be great again?
I mean, what you really need is integrity. In other words, you know, the biggest thing about, you know, the honest money movement that's never even talked about anymore, which, you know, I'm part of, you might say, it's not about gold and silver per se. It's about the honesty behind it, because that can't be forged or created with a digital screen or whatever. It's something real, tangible, that has intrinsic value. And this is what we have to get back to, integrity. I said what made America great was that people lived their word, that a verbal contract was valid. In other words, people lived their word. They did what they said. You could depend on things. And these were values that make society great at large. And now what you have is similar to the movie. You know, at the end of the Age of Empire, you have basically the ruling class looking for how much they can get, and they can never get enough. So they can never get enough of what they don't need, money per se, or number of houses, or number of cars, or private jets, or whatever, and be happy or be secure.
When you look at the billionaire index, I've always seen it as a really unhealthy index, if you like. If a country's got a lot of billionaires, you know there's a problem, right? Mm-hmm. But a lot of people see it as, oh, wow, we're doing really well. One of the things that people don't really understand, and I'd like you to unpack it, is that the richer the top 1% get, the less money is available to spend into the economy, because what have they got to spend it on? And then what happens is the bottom end of the economy starts to wither because they don't have spending power. True?
Somewhat. And it's pretty complex, but the idea is basically sound. Nature preaches balance. And going on the thesis, you know, how much do you need and what do you do with it? And this is where we're out of balance. Now, is it proper for the government to come in and say this is the right wage? And I'd argue no. because there is no such thing as a right wage. The market should actually determine it. And this is very difficult to do because of, you know, subsidies, rules, regulations, what's fair in this state might not be fair in that state, and on it goes. So it's a very difficult question to answer. But coming back to basics, we need to see where there is a balance. And if you go back to your initial part of the question about how do you view these billionaires, there is a documentary called I Am. And in that movie, talks about in the 30s, during the Great Depression, how the general public viewed this extreme wealth as being something of a mental illness, that there was something really wrong with someone that couldn't get enough. In other words, again, you can't get enough because you're not satisfied. And this is an integrity, or really I go as far out on a limb to say a spiritual situation, where unless we get together as human beings on a less of an intellectual level and a more of a heartfelt level, what real meaning in life is, we get back to that, where, you know, back to the precious metals, their real integrity isn't questioned by anyone anywhere. So, you know, an ounce of silver is as valuable to the lowest class as it is to the upper class. And there isn't any funny business in between, generally speaking. Mm-hmm. So now you have something that people can rely on, and you have a higher moral structure. Remember, I keep emphasizing that, because in true free market capitalism, it's a win-win. You might have a great idea, Ross. You put it forth, and the market says, this is brilliant. It cost me less time and less money to go across London because of Ross's invention, and it flourishes. But you've benefited yourself, but you also benefited society at large. But if you go into the crony capitalism, which is pervasive now globally, what you have is, you know, how can I rip off, you know, mom and dad's IRA? Oh, I'll come up with this derivative product to promise them this, but here's what's really happening. Unless we get back on track and we understand, again, the spiritual fundamental human right to speak the truth anywhere, always, and have your viewpoint heard, we really have lost a lot. And of course, we're not moving that direction.
How do you begin to rectify that?
Well, there's nothing more powerful than the truth. So shows like yours that you get to hear both sides, I think, is the most important thing you can do. You don't have to agree with it. I mean, I've changed my viewpoint several times because as I get older and learn new things, it's like, aha, I was wrong. And I'm not afraid to say I'm wrong and move on. Life is complicated, but the values of life are misunderstood. People should be taught to think critically and question everything and everyone. I mean, especially authority. And yet the masses on both sides in a way. I mean, the upper class are favored by, let's say, the tax legislation that they have. You know, the legal ability to hire the right accountants and the right legal firms to basically exempt themselves. And then you've got others that have no way of doing that, that are, you know, carrying the burden, and you're getting this widening of the class structure. And what is the right class structure? I don't know, but look out in the world and look at the animal kingdom, you know? I mean, there is a hierarchy, and yet there isn't the discrepancy that you see in the human form.
We've lost touch with natural law.
Absolutely. I mean, the founding principles of the country in the United States basically adhered itself pretty much to natural law. Remember, it's your God-given rights, or natural rights, were constitutionally secured. So the form that government took in the beginning was to secure your natural rights. That was their function, pure and simple. No more, no less.
Back to Renegade Inc., the show that allows us to think differently. Before we talk more about de-dollarization and wealth protection with David Morgan, let's have a look at what you've been tweeting about in this week's Renegade Inc. Index. First up, from Gold Telegraph, global central banks have practiced a policy known as quantitative easing, whereby central banks buy up assets and sell them at a high price. This has created an inflated asset bubble of $100 trillion, amounting to 1.5 times global GDP. Next, from Jim B. Token, it has often been quoted that there is never really a bad time to have a portion of your net worth in gold. It's a timeless asset class and cannot be devalued like cash via quantitative easing. It's a store of value. It's peerless. Gold as a proportion, not all in, as a proportion. You're an advocate?
Absolutely. I mean, I've advocated about a 10% holding in most cases. And if you're in the situation that I believe we're in, and you agree with most of my thinking, then you might move to 20%. But anything above and beyond that is too much. Again, how much, you know, too much of a good thing, right? And you can't have too much gold. You have to have balance.
Next, from Bloomberg Economics, a U.S. Treasury report this week appears to show that Russia liquidating dollar assets at a record pace. What's your view on this? Why is Russia dumping dollar assets?
Well, they see the inevitable. You can't print wealth. And of course, the idea that there's nothing more secure than the U.S. Treasuries is a fallacy. I mean, it's going to end badly. I mean, if the dollar's worth 2 cents of the 1913 dollar, then what's that 30 years out going to be worth? And so once you start to realize the inevitable, you're going to dump these treasury bills or bonds, anything in the debt markets that are U.S.-based, and move to something that's solid. And this is what Russia and China have been doing for a very long time.
Finally, a tweet from the ONS, which is the Office for National Statistics here in the UK. UK households' outgoings have surpassed their income for the first time since 1988, with the average household experiencing a £900 shortfall in 2017. What could go wrong?
Yeah, right. Well, as Catherine Austin Fitz says, you know, you just borrow the rest to keep your lifestyle the same. So you just go into the debt markets further and expand the bubble. The bubble's still expanding, hasn't popped yet.
When the debts are too large to be paid, whether they're international debts or domestic debts, the result is always a depression, because paying creditors more and more money as the debt rises and rises leaves less and less to be spent on goods and services. All of the growth since 2008 in the U.S. economy has actually accrued only to the wealthiest 5% of the population in the finance, real estate, and insurance sector, the FIRE sector. So you have this bifurcation between the wealthiest 10%, say, and the bottom 90%, and the economy is splitting between these two. What no one is willing to acknowledge right now is the same thing they were unwilling to acknowledge in the 1920s. In the end, debts can't be paid. And the basic principle that I've always popularized is debts that can't be paid won't be. The question is, how won't they be paid? There are two ways not to repay debts. One that I'm advocating is, if it's a bad debt, you write it down, and the creditors who made the bad loans have their loans written down. That's what happens when you make a bad loan throughout history. The alternative is not to write down the loans, but to let huge foreclosures to take place, even if it causes a depression, even if it throws people out of work, even if life spans shorten, as they're doing in the United States, even as suicide rates rise, as they're doing in the United States, even if paying the debts causes huge emigration, as it's caused out of Greece, Latvia, and other countries that have followed the neoliberal plan, all the debts must be paid. This is Hayek's free market. It's neo-serfdom. So the alternative to a debt write-down is mass impoverishment, chronic depression, and inability to recover, because all of the economic surplus is going to be paid to the creditors.
You mentioned in the first half, death throes of empire. When we talk about the US economy, it's certainly the most significant economy in the world. We look at China and we look at Russia and we look at the BRICS and we look at other. Why have we got to understand what's happening in America and understand the health of the American economy to understand what is also going on in the rest of the globe?
I think a good way to look at it is to forget about money. So let's just look at it as no money exists. And on this thought experiment, what we have to do is see, well, what do you have in your nation state that is of value to trade with another nation state? So now what do we have in the United States that's like the best that we do? What do we produce?
You're quite good at fast food, I'll give you that. Baseball, not bad at that. You're good at war.
Right.
Very good at war.
I'll stop you right there. So basically we have a war machine. Okay, so we export a lot of arms, and we do a lot of advertising and entertainment.
I'm very good at entertainment. Yeah.
So how much value is that to someone that's producing, let's say, food, for an example, or public transportation or whatever? So now you have to look at what is the real value based on what you produce versus how much money you can create out of thin air. Now you have a whole different perspective on your question, do you not?
You do. And are you positing that the war machine is actually an economic driver in the U.S.?
Absolutely. So if you look at China, for example, I'll interrupt you and you say, well, you know, there's been some blowback about the Chinese are taking over the empire, right? Because they're going into Africa, as an example, and they're building the infrastructure. But this is a business proposition. If I can come in and create something in your country and you agree with me, both sides agree, and that's going to produce more jobs or whatever, make both sides better. You know, it's better to trade with each other than it is to point guns at each other. So if you look at the empire as being ruled by force, which is basically the U.S. position, or let's say the empire ruled by an agreement, basically a business model, which would you prefer?
Right. So would you agree with Jack Ma, the founder of Alibaba's point, when he says America, you spent too much money on wars, not enough money on innovation.
Absolutely. You have got to look back to, you know, the first half of the show, meaning that, look, what are you doing it with? Are you doing it with the right motive or not? Are you doing it with your head only or your heart? Or are you really looking at the long term? I mean, the Chinese philosophy, the way I understand it, is they look out several generations.
Yeah, 500 years.
Yeah, so you're looking, you know, everything on Wall Street is the next quarter's earnings. And so this is...
So you've got really diametrically opposed forces because you've got Q1, Q2 over here in the US, and then you've got a multi-generational state of mind in China, which strategically runs circles around, or will run circles around, the US mentality.
Right. Remember, nature preaches balance. I mean, you're really seeing kind of a balancing, if you will, of something that's way overextended, the military machine, global empire based on force. You're going to do exactly what you want as long as you do what I tell you to do. I'm trying to be humorous here, but I mean, you know, how many of these countries, there's very few that the U.S. isn't involved in, meaning it has a presence in, that asked for them to come into their country? Very, very few, if any. And yet it's pervasive. So, and of course, the military costs are exorbitant. Just think about that capital doing something more productive for people at large. I mean, it's a huge discrepancy between the way the world is run. Then on the counterbalance, you have this, I'll call it an opponent, saying, hey, there's a different way to look at the world. There's a different thing that we can do. We can actually work together to build a better world.
And who's saying that?
Well, I think the Chinese, I know I'll get a bunch of flack back, but I think there's a lot of problems and they're communists and they rule at the end of a gun as well. And there's certainly been a lot of deaths due to it. I mean, I'm cognizant of all of these things, but I'm speaking more as philosophically. And if you look at the real world, which we have to deal with, I think they are at the other end of the pendulum, right or wrong. At least they're adding some counterbalance to the equation.
So the American president goes to Helsinki and meets the Russian president. Putin and Trump sit there. The liberal media goes bananas over to opinion of whether who did well and who didn't and who won and all the rest of it. But are you saying that actually fundamentally that's a good thing? Because countries getting on with each other instead of pointing guns at each other is a better way of organizing the future.
I'm a huge fan of Gandhi and Martin Luther King. I mean, peace is the way to go. So, you know, if Russia, the two biggest nuclear powers on the planet, can agree that peace is the way to go and we'd rather trade with each other than point guns at each other, that's a far better world than the one that exists now.
But to that end, there are an awful lot of vested interests keeping that war machine alive.
Well, that is the deep state. I mean, to a large degree, the deep state is the war machine.
Right.
And if you, you know, I mean, the basic tenet, I'm going to digress a bit, but the basic tenet of all the major traditions, the three main religions, is, you know, to kill is wrong. And yet somehow or other, if you kill someone on the street of Chicago, that's absolutely wrong, but we send the war machine over to kill somebody in another country and that's okay. I mean, either it is right or it is wrong. And it's these kind of principles that we have neglected to put in the public square for people to actually think about, because this is fundamental to what we do going forward. And if we cannot come to an agreement of certain foundational absolute truths, then all this gray area is meaningless. We have to have a principled moral understanding with integrity. It starts with yourself, and few people are taught that. It's all about my opinion. You know, oftentimes I'm asked something, I say, well, what do you think? And I say, I have not studied it enough to form an opinion. That's a very valid answer because it reflects back to you that I actually care about your question to me and providing something to the thought process, whether I can contribute or not. And if I cannot contribute, I should keep my mouth shut.
But in a media-heavy world of sound bites and vox pops and all those things, everyone has to have an opinion on everything.
Well, it goes back to your film. I mean, everybody wants popularity. I mean, what's the Facebook thing all about? Me, 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 I. You know, it's a selfishness society. And if you can't rise in popularity due to your economic status, which is really not that important as long as you have the basics. I'm not trying to mislead anyone, but it's really who are you and what can you contribute to not only yourself, but society at large? And, you know, I mean, the Enlightenment movement, if you want to call it that, I mean, how many people actually are satisfied with the pursuit of happiness because they're happy with what they have? Not that many.
As we conclude, let's just get back to the main thrust, which is de-dollarization. The world is outside the Anglo-American empire, if you want to call it that, is dumping the dollar. It's trying to get rid of payment systems that have been in place for many years. That dominance
would it be right for me to say is coming to an end, that American dominance is coming to an end?
Yes.
What does that mean for man on the street? What does that mean for the people watching this? How do we protect wealth and how do we think differently about the future now if that investment thesis is starting to come apart?
I think you have to look at it from my perspective. You asked the question of me. I think it's going to be a great spiritual awakening on the globe.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Because
that's a hopeful situation.
I think it is. And I want to leave on a positive note because if you look at what do you really need to be happy, you don't really need that much. Certainly your basic needs need to be met. And this is what the universal basic income is all about. But there's also human dignity involved in that equation. And if you're handing something, people don't value it. So you do have to do some work for it in my studied view. Nonetheless, you don't need as much as you're taught on the TV to be happy. So if we get when we get the reset, it's not only...
Don't give me a date and we won't hold you to it. What is the reset, very briefly?
It's going to be a complete destruction of the capital system or crony capital system as we know it now, and the market will reprice everything to what is the correct value or undervalue.
Right, now give me a date.
Okay, within the next 5 years.
Really?
I think so.
So this reset happens. The crony capitalists run because they can't hold their position. And you're saying there'll be a spiritual awakening because people have been on the wrong track.
Correct.
What does that look like?
It looks like you have to re-examine not only internally, but externally. So you have to see, people that you knew that had, all these apartment buildings on credit and they couldn't make their payments, so they lost them. And then you have to see how they react to that. Are they the same person that they were before they owned all that land or not? And you have to do a lot of soul searching. It'll be a global soul searching, in my opinion, because what will happen is that you will have less availability to everything that you have now. So what you're going to have to do is look at what the basic fundamental truths are for society at large or the human experience. And this is going to be a soul searching, and many people that addict themselves to the amount of stuff that they have will not make it. So it's going to come back down to how you appreciate you and others. We're not taught what the meaning of being is. We're taught to look outside of ourselves as the beginning, and that can never be satisfied. Unless you're satisfied within, it's not going to matter.
David Morgan, thank you very much for your time. That's it from Renegade Inc. HQ this week. You can drop the team a mail, studio@renegadeinc.com, or you can tweet us @RenegadeInc. Join us next week for more insight from those people who are thinking differently. But until then, stay curious.
This is The Morgan Report with David Morgan. For the latest in precious metals investing, gold, silver, the economy, and more, go to themorganreport.com.